This edition of Culture with Robert Bounders first broadcast on the 16th of March 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound. Today we're asking, how do you find a lost classic? We've only got half an hour, so we're sticking to musical lost classics. So who are the artists that have been discovered the second time round? Who finds them and where? Will Hodgkinson, chief music critic of The Times, has a pretty good idea.
He will spend days and days and days picking up things, and he'll say that out of 20, maybe one will be good, and quite often we'll only have maybe one good track. But every now and then you will unearth something fantastic.
We'll uncover the artists and genres that went unsung, but now are sung from the rooftops. We'll speak to the label that specialises in shining a light on the unknown. We'll discover an old genre made almost brand new. We'll ask what happens to music of a country when that country no longer exists. That's former Yugoslavia. And check out the unknown legend of Ghanaian pop. That's all to come here on Culture with me, Robert Bounds, on Monocle 24. Today we're asking the question, how do you find a lost classic? And we're keeping it to music, so who better to sort the one-hit wonders from the giants lurking in the deep than Will Hodgkinson, chief music critic at The Times and a fan of the long-lost musical love. Will knows the poignancy and the thrill of discovery that there is to be had from pressing play on artists who've gone AWOL. So here he is. Here's Will with a bit of a primer answering the question, how do you find a lost classic?
The reason it's called crate digging as opposed to just record buying is that it gives away this idea that you're finding a kind of gem amongst the rubble. And this would be at jumble sales, yard sales, as they call them in America, house clearances, often things that haven't been reissued. And I've been going to, you know, charity shops and things all my life, and most of the time I come up with nothing. Every now and then you come up with a gem. And what tends to happen with the serious record collectors is that they won't have heard of the person, and they're buying it on the strength of an interesting cover. Generally, on the enthusiast level, what they're trying to find is something that kind of has no value and has just been lost by the wayside, because records come out all the time and most of them are not hits, and every now and then there's a fantastic one out there which just got buried.
We're going to meander, Will. We're going to let our chat meander through some through some sounds here. First of all, I think we're going to have Sam by Pisces.
Okay, so
talk us through this one.
So this was issued by a fantastic label called Numero Group, who operate out of Chicago. And Numero dig really deep into obscure music. They've got a section called Eccentric Soul, which it's not so much eccentric in the way of sort of wayward, but soul that was completely buried. And so, for example, there would be, you know, soul that would come out of a certain nightclub in a certain town, and that would give you an idea of the culture of the town that it came from. And they discovered this sort of early hippie era record, which was never released, by a band called Pisces. I think it was in Illinois. And it was a guy who ran a record shop, and he had a tiny little studio. And there's a 15-year-old runaway girl called Linda Bauer who turned up, and she had this most amazing sort of Janis Joplin style
Already
voice.
We're in the stuff of legend.
Oh, it's amazing, yeah. And she disappeared afterwards, and nobody really knows what happened to her. But she recorded this one fantastic song. The album is called A Lovely Sight, and it's by a band called Pisces. And there are about four Linda Bauer tracks on it, and the best one is called Sam.
Well, you heard a bit of Sam by Pisces. That was Linda Bauer.
Linda Bauer, who didn't do anything else.
Singer. It's one of those things as well. You feel like an artist like that is one of those artists that was bound to inspire other artists and other female artists. You feel you can always backtrack Alanis Morissette and all sorts of other people into that.
But of course, she went nowhere.
I mean,
the thing is what you realise with the whole crate digging thing is you find these amazing records. You think, why didn't this get anywhere? And then you realise that a lot of making it has got down to character and ego. And someone like Linda Bauer is just a kind of crazy runaway, you know, a drifter. And she had a fantastic voice, and she recorded a handful of songs and then went off her own way. You know, she wasn't destined to have that kind of straight arrow career that someone like, I don't know, Alanis Morissette, to an extent, would have done.
We're going to talk about Sergio Mendes and a kind of forgotten classic or forgotten record, at least, from him. What label is this on? Maybe you can tell us a bit about this one.
Yeah, this was Soul Jazz, and Soul Jazz are very good at finding the sort of great missing links. You know, Sergio Mendes is very famous, but he's doing two things. On one level, he was taking bossa nova and Brazilian music and making it palatable to the West, but he's always picking up on trends that were going on in the West and trying to combine things. He was not a natural hippie. But like a lot of people of that time, he tried to make a hippie album.
He sort of postured himself.
He postured himself. And of course, you know, like a lot of great posturing hippie albums, it was a lost classic. And it was called Stillness. And he made it in Los Angeles with a bunch of session musicians and some of his own Brazilian musicians. And it's just beautiful. I mean, it's very elegant. It's got a real LA feel. And I think the ersatz quality is what makes it special. You know, and the song, which I think would be really great to play, is a version of For What It's Worth, which is one of the great Buffalo Springfield, the hippie era classics. But in his hands, it turns into something else. There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. We're going to talk about Karen Dalton now, who I didn't realise, I thought was always being reprinted, reissued in deluxe forms. I mean, this is a fantastic record. Tell us about the label and how she sort of came back from her 60s, I suppose, small amount of fame in the 60s. Small amount of fame, but very influential. She was an incredible voice, very raspy and a hard-living woman, you know, big smoker, drinker, quite a lot of drugs. And she was really the sort of spirit of Greenwich Village in the mid-60s and mainly did folk songs. She didn't really write her own songs, a few, but mostly covers. She had some degree of fame and her albums were available, but the label that really got her going again was Light in the Attic. There's always been bootlegs and there's always been reissues. And Light in the Attic it wasn't even a gap in the market. It was driven by, I think, a passion for Matt Sullivan, the founder. He thought, well, no, I want to do really beautiful editions, you know, expensive, well-produced editions of great records that have somehow slipped through the net. And Karen Dalton's In My Own Time was one of them. I think it was one of their best sellers, and it's just a beautiful record. Yesterday, any way you made it was good.
Well, it's difficult to. It's a tear in the eye always whenever I listen to that. It's quite an amazing. It's one of my favourite songs ever. That. Just to sort of round up our chat then about crate digging, about how to find a lost classic. There's clearly no recipe for it other than to sort of get out there. But the people that can shine a light for you are the likes of Johnny Trunk, of Light in the Attic,
and Numero
Records.
You can go two ways. You can either trust them, and just go ahead and buy anything on those labels and it's going to be interesting. Or if you've got the time and the patience, the best thing to do is to get out of the capitals. As time passes, things are reassessed. And so now I think we're beginning to see a reassessment of early 90s indie bands that fell by the wayside, which, you know, didn't get much thought at the time and released little lost classics. And so that it's generally 20 years behind. You know, you need a 20-year gap for the crate digging phenomenon to take place.
That was Will Hodgkinson, chief music critic of The Times, on some of his favourite lost classics and the labels that brought them to his ears. Up next, Exotica. Today, we're asking the question, how do you find a lost classic? And we're going exotic now. Exotica music is a genre that rose to popularity in the 1950s to mid-1960s, and it's associated with suburban America after the Second World War. Orchestral exotica evoked images of dreamy South Pacific islands and the Orient, with sounds of bongos, vibes, gongs, bamboo sticks, and even jungle calls, the roar of a big cat, or the squawk of a tropical bird. Exotica giants Martin Denny and Les Baxter are synonymous with the instrumental genre, but has anybody heard of Frank Hunter Not many. Sadly, he was overlooked by the major players of Exotica, and since the late 1990s, however, Exotica found a new audience with fans of retro lounge music and space age pop. Hunter's White Goddess album from 1959 has been deemed the holy grail of Exotica, and a fan-based demand led to its re-release last summer. Melanie Sevchenko visited her local record store to find out why Frank Hunter is more popular now than he was 50 years ago.
Trombonist and conductor Frank Hunter was one of Exotica's best-kept secrets. He collaborated with 1950s pop legends like Frankie Avalon and Pat Boone, and jazz greats of the time. As a veteran of big band, he mostly worked behind the scenes as an arranger for corporate studio music production. But his personal creative foray into Exotica is what would make him the unsung hero of the genre. Matt Carter has been shopping at record stores in Portland, Oregon since 2008. He works at Everyday Music in the northeast of the city. It's a shop where music collectors go to buy and sell used records. The only Frank Hunter album they currently have in stock is a re-release of Hunter's 1959 White Goddess.
Right here, we have a vinyl copy of The White Goddess by Frank Hunter and his orchestra. You can see here it goes for $24.99. It was just recently reissued this past July by Captain High Records.
It's filed under Easy Listening, a less sexy category for Exotica, which is associated with Island Fantasy.
Typically, most of the easy listening stuff that's going to come in is going to sell for, you know, quarters and nickels and dimes, things like that. But there are those that are kind of the diamond in the rough, like Frank Hunter or Les Baxter.
Do customers ask for Frank Hunter ever?
Customers do ask for Frank Hunter, but because the run of the vinyl was only a very limited amount, basically you're not really able to find this in stores as often as it should be.
The original pressing of White Goddess was released in 1959 by Cap Records, and as Matt Carter mentioned, with a limited run. But since Exotica's revival in the 1990s, music bloggers have been calling White Goddess a masterpiece, one of the most fascinating and captivating Exotica releases of all time. Some even claim it to be one of the rarest, most expensive records to possess. Musicians like Martin Denny and Les Baxter took Exotica to the mainstream. Denny's first album, titled Exotica and released in 1957, hit number one on the Billboard charts and spawned an entire genre. So why did Hunter's music fall into obscurity? Author and publisher V. Vale of Research Publications wrote extensively on Exotica in his book, Incredibly Strange Music. I spoke with him over the phone from his home in San Francisco.
I think he didn't do career development. It's a business thing. He didn't capitalize on the recording he'd made. It's like traveling around, broadcasting a lifestyle with each concert.
Last summer, Captain High Records, a small label in Austria, re-released White Goddess, apparently due to its high demand from diehard Exotica fans. But V. Vale thinks it might be the other way around. Perhaps it's the re-release of White Goddess that has sparked its new popularity. Because to listeners who are unfamiliar with the genre of Exotica, the album sounds fresh and innovative.
There's probably a ton more, you know, kind of rare records that just need to be re-released and then re-promoted. But it's all marketing these days.
But even so, the sales don't lie. Here's Matt Carter again.
We have a lot of other Exotica music in the store. Typically, nothing is going to sell as well as this album, which caught fire very late after the original release. White Goddess is really considered an undiscovered gem.
And for those just now discovering Frank Hunter, White Goddess will surely take them to new regions with the call of the siren. For Monocle in Portland, I'm Melanie Sevchenko.
Nearly slipped out of my silk dressing gown there. Thanks, Melanie. You're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound. We're asking the question, how do you find a lost classic? Now, Yugoslavia used to have a thriving record industry before the conflict and breakup of the 1990s. Now enthusiasts are rediscovering and reissuing the music made in the years of Tito and beyond. It labours under the ungainly umbrella term XU, but it includes nuggets which have ignited international turntables and dance floors, from the jazz funk of Janko Nilovic to the anything goes attitude of the compilation series Idi Igra. That's Go Dance to you. Our Belgrade correspondent Guy Delaunay went to meet the people behind the Cosmic Sounds and Idi Igraj release and listen to what they found.
Željko Kerleta, I'm an architect. I've been running Cosmic Sounds record label and a radio show called The Return of Gagarin. First time when I heard Janko Nilovic was on Giles Peterson show, and that was the tune that stuck into my head. I started singing it for days and days. I couldn't get rid of it until it took me a couple of years to find my copy. I paid £150 for that. We sold a few thousand copies, which was one of the best sellers for my label, and I sell a few hundred to like a couple of thousand maximum. This one I reprinted, so it was like a big seller for me. And obviously I got a lot of respect for doing that, and it's been reissued by other labels later on, so that means that the market is slightly wider than I could cover. He was so excited about me reissuing that album that he created 2 hours of music very, very similar to that album that I reissued.
My name is Vladimir Jelic, DJ Chile, and I helped my friend DJ Funky Junkie to compile the series of XU music from 1960s up to the 90s. Idi Igraj, or Go Dance, volumes 1, 2 and 3. The original source was vinyl, because the tapes were very, very expensive. They used to re-record them, so the tapes were used for recording, then the record was cut, and after that they would re-record those tapes. In the West, there are people who dig that kind of music. There are many, many, many people who started picking up things from there and incorporating them in their work. 2 days ago, actually, I found a masterpiece which I was looking for years. But then I found the original 7-incher. And this is a record which was released as for the anniversary of the man's, you know, trip to the moon. And this is the local artist from Bosnia, Safet Isović, who was a folk singer. This record is amazing. It uses analog synthesizers, you know, wicked breakbeats, and some traditional folk singing. And it's original. It hasn't been re-edited, so it's been recorded in one piece.
And is this destined for one of your compilations?
Well, I don't think so. I think I will keep this because, you know, some stuff you have to keep as a absolute rarity.
Wow. And that was quite Austin Powers, wasn't it, in parts? That was Guy Delaunay, our Belgrade correspondent, reporting from exactly there. Funky junkie indeed. How do you find a lost classic? That is the question that we're asking on this edition of Culture. With me, Robert Bound, someone who definitely knows is Matt Sullivan, founder of Light in the Attic, a record label formed, as legend has it, after a serendipitous car crash in Madrid, in which he found that the other lousy driver was a fan of Iggy and the Stooges, the MC5 and Suicide, and other mega-cool American bands. We morph forward a few years, and Light in the Attic, based in Seattle and Los Angeles, is the fountainhead of lost classics, the wellspring of forgotten brilliance. Here is Matt Sullivan on the phone from LA answering the question, how do you find a lost classic?
Everything we release, we're incredibly passionate about. We get obsessed with these things, and you know, we're not going to put something out that we wouldn't go to the store and buy ourselves. There's of course things that we sometimes want to reissue that we have to think twice about. And also for us, we only have so many hands as well. So last year we put out about 26 or 27 releases. This year will be a little more. There's only so much time in the day, so it just has to be a record we like. I mean, it could be heavy metal, it could be folk music, it could be new age music. I mean, there's something in every one of those genres that we enjoy. So picking out what it is we do is, it's just kind of random. I mean, a lot of times we're, you know, we might find something on a blog, or quite often we have a friend or record collector, or someone works at a record store, or read about someone like Will Hodgkinson about a record that they suggest we reissue, or we reissue something and then get in touch with the artist and then they tell us about some record they made or their producer made or their brother made that we had never heard. And it's kind of a domino effect where things kind of unfold in strange ways, and you know, we found records and in every way possible. So it's every project's a little bit different.
We're asking the question, how do you find lost classics? So I don't know, you can tell us, but it seems like it's still very much by luck, by taste, by a kind of skewed bit of judgment. How do you find a lost classic, Matt?
It's totally by luck, or some strange like meeting of the cosmos or something. You know, people all the time are emailing us or reaching out to us, you should reissue this or this. And, you know, we're very picky on what we do. And there just has to be something within that record or the grooves that speak to us. And, you know, something like, you know, Lewis, which just a friend, you know, said to me, you got to hear Lewis. This is the one record my wife and newborn baby and I go to sleep to every night. It's just this peaceful, beautiful record and you'll love it. And he sends me, you know, some audio and I'm just transfixed. How do I not know this already? Just kind of, you know, I feel like it's quite often a word of mouth experience like that. How he found it, I don't know. Maybe it was a blog for him.
You talked about Lewis and you talked about Rodriguez as well. These are two albums that seem to be, or two artists that seem to make music that feels like it's part of the ether. It feels like we always should have known it, as if they are some sort of, you know, as if they're someone like Bob Dylan or someone with an attitude and a voice and a songwriting style that we almost missed without knowing it. Is that when you know a record like that, a reissue, is going to be a success?
I want to say yes, but it absolutely never makes much sense. I mean... I think there's things we've reissued that I would have expected maybe to take off more than they did. I had high hopes for Rodriguez. I mean, I think that's, you know, I really, truly, regardless of the success it's had, I've always felt that Cold Fact is one of the great all-time records. So, we had hopes that it would take off, but you never know. I mean, the Lewis thing was just the strangest experience of my life, I have to say. And watching that whole saga unfold and finding him in Vancouver sitting at a coffee shop basking in the glow of the sun, it was just the weirdest thing. But that's another discussion for another time. Yeah, I wish there was an easy answer on that, but you know, I think it's kind of the weirdness of the music industry, of you know, what people gravitate towards, why things take off. There's not really a scientific equation to it, and you know, that's what makes everything interesting.
Nice one, Matt. That was Matt Sullivan of Light in the Attic Records in LA. In 1993, a young musician called Atta Kak, who had fled the turmoil in his native Ghana in the 1980s, produced his first and only album in his small rented apartment in Toronto. He hawked the cassette tapes on the streets of the city and sent the remainder back to Ghana for his brother to sell on his behalf. CBC journalist Joshua Errett recently tracked down Atta Kak and unearthed his remarkable story. Here's Errett on how he rediscovered one of Toronto's forgotten musical masterpieces.
Atta Kak is a guy from Ghana, this city called Kumasi, Ghana. He was a guy who, you know, learned to play the drums by himself. He was banging on tree trunks and countertops and sort of just going along life, you know, picking up music along the way. He worked at a golf club, a country club, managing the bar. He got a high school education in Kumasi. And then he sort of just moved on with his life, with music never really being a driving force for him. He moved to Germany shortly after to be with his wife. During this time that he was in Germany, he played in Ghanaian high life band. High life is a type of music very popular in Ghana at the time, and still today. And then he came to Toronto, and that was another immigration wave. A lot of Ghanaians came to the city, and there was a population of them there. And there he sort of did the same thing. He played in the traditional high life band, played the drums, he sang a little bit. He wanted to extend high life, but take it in a new direction. And that's where this one album, Obasima, comes from. It's kind of taking high life, and it's taking American rap music, and it's taking American disco music, and it's putting them all into one kind of unclassifiable music that he came up with pretty much on his own. After he recorded it in his home studio, he spent all his money on collecting instruments and creating that home studio, which stretched the length of his living room and into his bathroom. He made about 50 cassette tapes when it came out in 94, but he couldn't distribute them. He had no capital to do so. So he sent the majority of the tapes back to Ghana to his twin brother. He reported back to Atta that they sold 3 cassette tapes overall. And so Atta was heartbroken. It never, to his knowledge, it never reached anybody. But years later, his wife was deported from Canada and they moved back to Kumasi, Ghana. And he found that people knew of the songs. He would go around and people would know of the songs, but they didn't ever buy a copy of the tape or they didn't really know who he was. He could have used that success in the 1994 when this album came out. Instead, it was 25 years after he recorded it that everyone's finally hearing it and the genius of it. And you talk to him about that and you say, you know, Atta, what would have happened if this came out in 1994? So he said, there are 2 ways life goes, your way or God's way. And he tells me he always prefers God's way. He has a great attitude about it. He doesn't seem to be bitter or, you know, resentful at all of what has happened to him.
Wow, that was brilliant. That was the CBC's Joshua Errett there on the story of Atta Kak, bringing us to the end of this week's show. So there we have it. What sort of idiot asks the question, how do you find a lost classic with only half an hour in which to answer it? Us. So what can we draw from our sources? That you might find a forgotten gem if you go in search of it, but a lot of it is just luck. That you need your ears attuned, of course, and that you need to spend some time in yard sales, bric-a-brac shops, unlikely auctions, and you need to be curious. Most of all, you need to know what a classic sounds like to know what a lost one might be. Go out with open ears and a palm full of coins and discover your own, why not? For every James Galway, there's a Karen Dalton. For every mouse beneath the floorboards, there's a light in the attic. You've been tuned into Culture on Monocle 24. My producer was top of the charts, Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time next week. We'll be asking and answering another question. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bounds. Thank you very much for tuning in.